sense anymore. But in my talk, in this introduction that I'll try to give you, this quote is quite appropriate in the sense that I will be doing integrals and like once you use things so basically calculus or something rather than this level will be completely sufficient at least for this day. Tomorrow is gonna be different. So now I'm gonna have the presentation. And it's like continue. How does it work? I wanted to do the shutter.
So they can do it back there.
Okay. I'll do it like a manual type one. So like I said, all different various integrals. Most of them. And integrals that will be associated. Much like Andrew said, I'll give you tables of things, but each of those will be associated to a graph, something like this. Whose nodes will be labeled by integers. One, two, three, four, as labels of our graph, AI, and we'll require that all of these guys, all of the guys, and sometimes it will be also convenient to use OM data that also includes this information, namely, it will introduce
the metric screen share
such that. Study is basically one and vertices I and j are connected by a hash. It's zero otherwise. And I guess it's a little bit confusing for this matrix. So what it means that I and j coincide, but likely it already decided that each vertex itself is labeled by an integer, so therefore a natural thing is to put AI precisely in the slot.
Sorry, Sergey, can we interrupt for a second?
So this will be a matrix size, famous number.
Sergey!
Sergey!
Can you guys hear us?
In each of the exercises that we're going to do, this will be the input data. So this input data, I'm going to associate something. And this something will be given by. And we'll do it three times, one after another, constantly running. So, given such a graph whose vertices are labeled by integers,
can anyone hear us over there?
An integral, and generically, such integrals will be called by Z, with perhaps the various decorations, and so on. And to each of the vertices, we'll associate a complex variable, which will be integration. So this will be a multi-dimensional integral over a bunch of variables, one for each. D runs over the vertices. Then we'll have integrals of the corresponding variables. We'll call them by different names. So here I'll write just xv. So it will be some kind of integral over dxv over 2 pi I xv. And then for each vertex, each time, I'll choose some universal factor that will be some specific complete function which takes, for example, the variable x on the particular vertex as well as integer label as an something that will skip here. And then the integrand will be basically product over such vertex factors and analogous edge. So there'll be product over vertices and edges. And all I have to do is to tell you what are these universal factors are, and what's the domain of integration, and each time they'll produce. So this will be my version of calculus.
branch part of the mountain.
Any.
What is this?
So what geometric or mathematical objects are we trying to understand?
At this point, like I said, start really low, it's level just integrals and graphs. So we'll start the integrals attached to graphs. There is no other.
These functions are functions in the variable xv, or in, what are the variables in the bracket?
In the brackets, I'll tell you each time. So maybe we'll go to first example now. At variables x will be attached to each vertex, but it will be integrated out. Okay. Eventually, this result will not depend on axis or whatever will be the corresponding integration. Think of my first example, like forward. So, table of integrals number one is the following. So, this will be the rules of the game. If I have a vertex labeled by integer a, I'm going to attach to it an integrand, which looks as follows. It will be 2 sinh of iu squared. Exponential of pi I a u squared over 2. And every time I have an edge, so attach to it an integrand. So here an integration variable is called u. So here are the x vertices, and each vertex carries some integration variable, so edge kind of two integrations. And I'll call them U1. This is H and X. Now here is the current of going to the sine of pi U1 U2 divided by square root of HI by sinh pi U1 by sinh pi U2. And in this table of integrals number one, what we're going to do, we'll try to do the integral each time over a variable u from minus infinity to plus infinity. Or you may find it convenient to shift, to tilt this integration for a little bit and introduce all parameter epsilon and integrate over real x. Right. But otherwise, that's a definite integral over real line. And if you attach this and put it in for each factor of the vertex in those parentheses and this edge, you'll get something extremely concrete that you can attach to, say, this graph, and you'll produce an integral z, which is just a number. Well, it depends on graph and depends on AIs, what are the integral a. In this talk, without loss of generality, we can assume that this graph, say, is definite, so that this matrix Q has, say, only positive form and negative. We can relax this later, but for the sake of the talk, let's. So, at this point, I call this integral most just as random to you as it does to me. And I hope you're wondering, why do I have to ask you to do this for integrals? In fact, I'll do even more. This is supposed to be more introductory and less with homework. And this is very concrete. This is, you can program on mathematics, or if first year graduate students, of course they have to do this. They'll have it. We'll do it. But the question is to compute the value of the integral, say, for this graph. I'll just say take a graph with two vertices for some reason, and I'll label that for it. So how about another one which is labeled by 1, 5, and 2, and maybe one more, just to make it more fun or interesting homework, labeled by 3, 1, and 5. Any questions? So I hope I defined for you an integral or some rules to associate concrete pressure Z to such graph. And again, all I'm trying to emphasize is that in each example, we'll need to assign concrete rule what to associate vertex, associate edge, and then we're done. All defined. Is it clear? Any questions?
Are they all the same?
They look different, but I hope somebody homework. They actually had good time because this is easy enough to program them. All the homework before I finish. that's it. Any other? All right, so if not, then let's go to of integrals number two. And each time, as I said, we'll do three tables of integrals. Each time there will be something new slowly introduced, making the story a little bit more interesting. And here in the table of integrals number two, I can also write it in terms of integral like that, of products of edge factors and vertex factors, but I'll simplify expression a little bit and already present it as an integral and this product only for vertices, but I'll take advantage of the fact to introduce the bug, and if you want, you can write it in that form as well, right? So it will be product over I, which takes label or takes values on the vertices. Then, just as in the general expression, we'll have ESI over 2.5 x I. So we'll do this integrals, and in the present case, the integration is over x I's on the circle, so these are also two integrals. Multi-dimensional. And the integrand will have the following form. It will be basically a rather simple rational function. 1 over 1 minus product over j, which also runs over 7. And j minus q ji. So here I take advantage of my matrix q, this adjacency times. Times 1 minus x I to the power, which is degree of the vertex I minus 2. So degree here is defined as number of edges which go into the vertex. So for instance, there I have vertices of 1, 2, and 3. And here I'll also stick x I to the h. Okay. So this is complete form of that integral. Again, there is one integration variable for each edge. If you want, you can write it in the form of products of edges and vertices. I already massaged it. And something extremely concrete, something that can be. And then you can program it in mathematics. I will for you answer. So the only thing that's somewhat new in the second table of integrals is that I introduced a new object variable, hi. And there are as many h's as integration variables. So in fact, what we learned from looking at the structure is that there are a bunch of h's, which are assumed to be integers as a start, one for vertices. But if you think about it a little bit, and if you play with this integral, one thing you quickly notice that the result of this integration depends on hi only modular shift by pros and cons of this matrix. So actually, h is in the core kernel. And if the determinant is non zero, then that's a fine answer. H belongs to the core kernel of matrix Q. That's one thing you notice. And then if you continue exploring the integrals, you notice something else. But what we thought is dependence on initial data it actually enjoys lots of other symmetries that are similar. If of the variables HI, this particular does it. It's not just a number. In this case, these are just numbers. Else, once it is graph number, here for each graph, it's a number plus H. But what else you discover if you look at these integrals carefully?
Look at the integral matrix, the kernel is so. Matrix is a symmetric matrix, is integral coefficient.
It's a finite set, yes. So let's assume
so
that
the determinant is non-zero.
Exactly. I already made some assumption that it's either definite positive or definite negative. It's a determinant non-zero. It's a finite set. For simplicity, again, later in the talk, I'll tell you what these relaxes. But at this point, there are zillions of graphs. Like I said, you can imagine any graph you want. These, of course, are just daily examples of three vertices. If you have your favorite graph, say a linking diagram with its labels, that's fine. So you can use that one or anything like that. But what you do notice is that if you perform these integrals, either in table one or two, they both enjoy interesting symmetries. So in particular, if you have such structure where there are two vertices labeled by A1 and A2 connected by an edge, and they could be connected to the rest of the diagram which I represent with dots, then doing this integral is essentially the same as doing the integral where you have A1 replaced by either plus 1 or minus 1. And additional vertex here in the middle, also labeled by either plus 1 or minus 1, is correlated. And here you have A2 with plus 1 and minus 1 as well, and the rest of the diagram does not change. So this is one example of a symmetry which is enjoyed by this table of integrals and this table. So in addition, there are many other symmetries, such as, for example, this one. If you have some vertex labeled by A, you can replace it by a plus 1 or minus 1, and correspondingly with the same sign, and the vertex here is plus 1 or minus 1. So I claim that also doesn't change the value of the integral. And in particular, in this homework assignment, these three are actually equal. So if you actually do the homework, you observe that they produce the same numerical value for each of these graphs. And that's where some of the coefficients, like root of 8 and so on, were important to ensure that there are these symmetries. So what are you doing here? You started assigning to each graph whose vertices are labeled by integers. First, then, on this big set, there are symmetries or equivalences such that the value of the integral does not change once certain operations run. And let's see, I used only 20 minutes of my talk, and as far as I know, this is one of the quickest ways to learn Kirby calculus. Yeah, I promise you that the calculus, what you really do wrong, Kirby calculus. Kirby calculus, the usual calculus. In the sense that we're doing integrals and learning about symmetries. So Kirby calculus, in this case, applied to three manifolds, is a way to describe three-dimensional topology, three-dimensional manifolds, using some graphical calculus like that. So the idea, and for my using it, is that given our graph whose vertices are labeled by something, by integers, AI, you can associate with the three name. And there are many different graphs for the cold plumbing gross in this case, the technical name is that is the plumbing gross. Given the free manifold, there are many different plumbing graphs which describe the very same free manifold, and equivalences on those are called Kirby moves. And what we just discovered is precisely the set of Kirby moves by Ring and basic help. So conceptually, what's going on is, you can think of it this way, what we just defined in table of integrals number one and table of integrals number two, we define two free manifold invariants. Because how do you define invariant? You say, to a given way of constructing manifold, you have to assign some number. And then you show that it's invariant under topological moves, such as Rademeister moves in the case of knots, or Turby moves in the case of free manifolds. So in table number one, in table number two, you produce, without knowing that, some particular free manifold invariants. The question is, do you have any guess what table number one gives us? What kind of free manifold invariant produces? Maybe some one kind of.
But the part that something
yes.
Is not what we recorded was the like completely.
So the integral is still here. What it gives for every free manifold constructed in this way, that gives a number. What kind of invariance of manifold? That just goes.
What are you?
Okay, you mean hyperbolic integrals. Yes, so that's actually already a very good answer. Because what this first invariant does, it computes for you some quantum version of hyperbolic polynomials. Now, it computes a very particular free manifold invariant that's usually in the literature referred as SLTC quantum transcendence, which in a classical limit would indeed behave very much like exponential of 1 over h bar times the volume of M3 plus dot dot dot. But the thing is that this particular integral computes it at a very non-zero value, or non-small value of h bar, such that this is simply quantum, to very far quantum territory, but it is indeed close analog of volume. Okay, that's the best way I know how to write what we just did in table one.
Is the volume of this graph manifold zero?
Classical volume, yes. Classical volume, yes, but SL2C transcendence is not zero. So that's why
this formula, it's not equal.
It's not equal. So that's, I'm trying to explain what this is. And if I introduce variable h bar, it will have. I could tune it as a parameter, and indeed, if it were small, the z would be. So the thing is, what I gave you is a value of h bar, which is very far from whichever possible limit you can imagine. So in some sense, it's very small. Okay, so thank you. We identified the first table of integrals as an invariant. So can you guess what the second one? Let's see, reach my porch layer. Means. So, again, what kind of three manifold invariants do you know? And maybe once we go through the list of what we know, we should keep in mind that what the second table of integral does. It associates to a graph, or now as we know, a free manifold, a number for each additional data, namely choice of this h. And if you ask me, what is this co-kernel from the viewpoint of a free manifold? crushing by choice of page one, the first homology of a three manifold. So basically here in the stable number two, we naturally have a set of invariants labeled by elements of H1.
So any H1 is not a finite group.
Huh?
The H1 is a finite group.
Yes. In this case, for with all our assumptions at least so far, for this Fleming graphs, the corresponding manifolds have finite H1, which is precisely. So what would be, can you think of invariants labeled by elements of H1? So I can also give you yet another hint that H1 can be identified with the choices in C structure. So what's in any bill? Where do you need spinors when we talk about manifolds, topology?
Structure,
did you say? Spin C structure. So you need to have some kind of a spin structure. Anything? So let's just go through the list of invariants. What kind of topological invariant?
Row invariant.
Rows. Yes. Good. So let's brainstorm together. This is informal. So I'm allowed to ask you a question. Any cool names that you can suggest?
We have a whole bunch of other.
Good. So WRC, quantum group invariants of various kinds. That's usually it also labeled by some kind of data such as H bar or Q or level or so. You don't see this. It doesn't smell. That's good to keep in mind. Excellent. These are some of the most powerful, after all, three manifold. What else would it be?
Gauge
theoretic. Gauge theoretic, yes. So what are the most well-known gauge theoretic invariants people usually use? You guys know because
they're not numbers. They're homology groups, not numbers.
That's okay. Give me homology groups and we'll extrapolate. That's actually a good one. Yes, it is a four manifold thing, but see, if you have a four manifold, you can take your four manifold to a circle. And that gives you essentially the invariant. So, in fact, what this is, this invariants are the provision invariants of a three manifold with a choice of spin C structure, which is precisely this additional data page. And yes, it's true that usually when people talk about cyber equipment, they have four dimensional invariants, but there are just as perfectly good, in fact, easier cyber equipment equations in dimension three. You simply take same set of keys in four dimensions, write them on a three manifold, and again count solutions sides. So that gives you an integer labeled by precisely this thing. So if you have never computed cyber equipment invariants in your life, there you go. This is your concrete way of doing it. At least for a bunch of manifolds, which include one press here and so on. This is your. So I promised you three tables of integrals. So let's go to the third table. And again, just like in previous versions, what I have to tell you is what are the rules of the game and what to associate each vertex that carries integer label, what to associate to an edge, and then we'll do the integration. And I have to write some comments. What's the integration domain open? So here, the rules of the game will be the following. To each vertex labeled by integer will associate the factor in our integer due to the power minus 3 plus 8 over 4. Okay, some of these numbers are important to get invariance under Purdue rules. We'll associate the factor x minus inverse of x squared. So this is our integration variable that sits at the given vertex. And here notice that I introduce a new parameter q, so the result of the integration will actually be, our goal will be to explore what kind of function it is. To an edge, we're going to associate a factor which depends on two integration variables at both sides of the edge, x1 minus 1 over x1 times x2 minus 1 over x1. And now you do the same integral as we discussed before. This time I'm going to call this integral the hat. So let me call this maybe D, since it has another A and I don't get confusion. It will be labeled by A, which is not the same as the label we used. I'll explain this. So the result will be a function of Q by already. Okay. And it's going to be defined as a principal value integral again on a union circle where all of the integration variables sit on the circle, product over vertices. Here we have dxj over 2.0xj for factors. Analogous product over edges. And finally, I'm going to stick into this integram. So we follow exactly the same rules as before. Theta function, capital theta, so make it a little smaller, which depends on q, and depends on, more importantly, on all of the integration variables x, which is basically theta function for our linear quadratic form q that is essentially the adjacent symmetric. So this theta function has offset little a, so maybe I'll write it explicitly. So this theta associated to the quadratic label a is in my notation sum over s in lattice 2q integer to the size of graph plus a, so a is this offset, and then we have the usual expression q to the minus. And the inverse on these notations n over 4, quadratic power of q, and the linear power of x, so we have product over j, x j, and j. So that's explicit form of this theta function. And it's the usual theta function associated to lattice with symmetric form. And again, you can check that. So this is my third table of integrals. The language of prime ring, and we're defining something by table of integral by tables. And again, you can check that these rules enjoy all the moves which I have raised, but they represent symmetries just as in the first case and the second. So, unlike the previous examples, this one depends, so this object Z hat depends on Q. So Q is a variable. It also depends on some discrete labels, which here I call A. Maybe I should have been calling them. That's analogous to what we had in the previous example. But I hope at this point you already start wondering how come we have so many complicated tables of integrals. Different. Not different data and so on, but they enjoy the same asymmetries, they enjoy the same rules or equivalences under some. So what's going on conceptually? But anyway, before we get there, let's just ponder and analyze this third table of integrals and ask the same question we did before. If this is supposed to be a free manifold invariant, what kind of invariant is this? You can compute it, and what you find is that tensor always comes in the form where it's due to some overall power, not necessarily integer. I'll go with that. That's amazing. But then the rest is actually pretty nice and has the form of typical Fourier expansion on some modular form where you have power series on Q with integer powers and integer code. So the fact that it has integer powers and coefficients suggests that these coefficients may be counting something. After all, anytime you have something, they should be counting something, they should have meaning. And most of the time, in three-manifold topology, integer coefficients come up again at something like cyber-fit, because those are defined as counting solutions with signs. So you may think this probably these coefficients may be related to cyber-fit. But that's not the case, and you can easily convince yourself that cyber-fitting is way too simple to account for coefficients of the series. However, one of the hints, which as someone suggested, was that this power delta is of nature of cyber-Quitton type invariance because it's exactly equal what people call correction term in Hilbert Fourier homology, which is categorification. Right? So this might suggest it's related to cyber. But again, the whole series is way too much for cyber-Quitton. But the truth is, I don't know. This is a new invariant. Or is it completely new in the sense that there is no other way to define coefficients, okay? Either that going through this procedure, or is generalization, arbitrary, or using some surgeries that the knowledge can grant. But I have not seen anything like this before. And
is the hat determined by the first Q coefficient?
No.
So it's not like a modular.
As far as I know, not only in C happens to not quite modular form, but quantum or straight, not modular. So one of these functions of parameter knowledge will come up. For example, if you can do this for one press, you're going to do this. This happens to be the same as Ramanujan, whether it's modular. But in general, they quickly go if you consider, say, cipher manifolds, climbing graphs, more than four or five vertices, you quickly go into the territory of high depth, not modular objects, and then the hell breaks. For graphs like that, it probably, first of all, it's not cipher. That's definitely not any modifier. So therefore, in this top I'll take only one theorem, but the subject, it's new. Freshly baked the oven. I don't know all of its properties. I think it's good to explore them, but I'll give you one statement, or rather three statements from this work that we made. Sutra and someone else. So, first part of the theorem says that this is a well defined object. And we should ask where it's well defined. Well, it's well defined inside the inner. So, first statement is that it's convergent in Q absolute value less than 1. Second question, or second point, is that this Z hat of Q labeled by choice of graph on one generated three manifold. In that way, the x values up to this overall power into power series of Q with integer powers and integer code. That's not so hard to prove either, because what we're doing basically, we're taking some rational function convolution with it. So that's a little bit of algebra, but it's what's more interesting and slightly more trivial is that if you consider the limit where Q goes to exponential of 2 pi I over k of this object g, z hat, is defined, as I said, it's convergent inside the unit distance. It's important that this is strict inequality.
It's actually divergent in generic points on the unit disk, so I cannot say u less than or equal to 1, but it can take radial limit. So if this is my q plane, what I can do, I can fix a root of unity, specifically exponential of 2 pi over k, and try to consider a radial limit and ask what happens. So then the claim is that this season is the same as quantum group invariant due to Rishtig and Pryor and Litton at level k. So this quantum group invariants are not defined at generic levels, they're only defined at various points on the unit circle, namely the kth primitive roots of unity. And the claim is that this quantum group invariant appears as a radial limit if you shoot due to a very particular value. So morally, what this d-hats do for you, they provide analytic continuation of all these values inside of the unit. And now the reason this is interesting for categorification is because for knots, analogous statement is easy. The way quantum knot invariants are defined is LPRT invariant if I write it for knot, they're already given to us usually in the form of a function that's easily extendable at the unit. You can write it as a function of u rather than a function of this level k as the integer. So the important point here is that k here is an but for free manifolds, this is not true, and you can convince yourself with these examples that considerably, because even if you take a small cross-serial circuit, that WRT invariant is actually a polynomial in k. It's given by famous Berlin deform. So how the hell can you have polynomial in k values of k through to unity being continued into some nice power series? So that's precisely what this thing does. And that's why it's interesting for categorization program, because now this integer coefficient of z hat can be categorified in a Hovanov-like homology. So it's this last item on the theorem that's dear to us. And that's what I think is interesting and exciting. But of course, there are lots of other questions, such as what this coefficients are and so on. I don't know the answer to many of these questions. What I do know is that it's fairly easy to compute.
We ask questions?
I think we may hear us.
But I can interrupt them I'm live.
So you're saying we can text them?
I'm saying if you have a question, let me know and I'll let them know.
Does the limit depend on A?
There are several different.
No, dude.
Also, I have a question or two.
Original definition is based on physics, and it's probably not a mathematical definition, but it allows physicists. So then there was a definition based on so-called resurgent analysis, and that's complicated. That's a lot of analysis. It's reducing it to just direct restatement of physics. And for two of your different ways of building. So this is what we're doing with two-parent is a version which is based. If it's successful, then it will give completely different alternative, in my view, computational scheme, in mathematics point of view, definition of this invariant. But then the challenge becomes to show that that always agrees with this definition for a quantum group. So that would be a challenge. So in some sense, what's going on now is that there are different definitions, and the question is, are they consistent? So this is very much work in progress and ongoing.
For instance, somebody attempted to define the z hat using triangulations or other techniques. I can imagine there are many ways to build free manifolds. So the only two that I'm fairly confident talking about are essentially various surgery calculus because I'm using this question. Any other? No? No, it's... okay, I'll just use a different table, I guess.
How about the various?
So just to show you that it's easy and a little bit more convincing, I don't want to do homework in real time. I can ask Mathematica to do it. As again, whole talk is supposed to be at the level that you can take these rules and just implement them in 5 minutes on the back. So this Mathematica consists of several pages, first of which is just the definition. So here I introduce the data of the graph itself. So the first line is basically coefficients. These are AIs. So then it computes, it shows you the graph, computes eigenvalues if you want to make sure that it's definite, computes inverse matrix. So this first page or two is just basic. It's like introducing. So then the actual computation starts and it takes only 2 months. And then here you go, this is the output. So just to make sure that, so this is for particular calculation, say for this graph, labeled by 2, 3, 7, and 1 in the middle. So I'm going to copy this answer. So I told you to trust me. So let me have it in a second later. And what I'm going to do is I'll modify the graph according to the rules I said before. So for instance, remember that we could do this procedure where we replace the vertex by plus or minus 1, not another vertex, something that you want plus 1 minus 1. What I'm going to do is replace 1 by 8, and I'll replace, I'll create another vertex labeled by 1, and then, yeah, many of these things you should probably not try in real time, but I'll ask it to evaluate a notebook, and if everything is done correctly, you should see that the answer is the same, but before we scroll all the way down, let's look at what's going on here. So indeed, the graph has been modified, so now we have this, instead of minus 7, we have minus 8, minus 1, so it seems to be doing what we wanted. And now I scroll down and I see that result is or is not the same. Let's see if it changes. Yeah, it's 1 minus q to the 5, exactly as we had a moment ago. Didn't change. And you can continue playing with this in any direction you want. You can compute it for any graph. If you have time, if you want to suggest a graph, I can do it.
are these all curvy moves in graph manifolds or just some of them?
All of them. I presented only two, namely the blob moves, what's called blob moves, but there are a couple of more. There are a little less.
But they don't change.
They don't change the answer. So it's really a topological invariance. In fact, in this theorem, I should add a point, which again is shown somewhere in the paper, that it is invariant. On the turbulence. Otherwise, it won't be found. Okay, so I'm going to click the kernel, meaning erase Mathematica's memory, and ask the open the floor questions. And if has any input, you can give me any girl.
So,
E8. So,
let's do E8. So all I know is that it has 8 vertices, all labeled by, or in my case. five, six, seven, eight. One goes to 2, 2 goes to 3, 3 goes to 4, and then 3 continues to 5. It continues to 7. 7 continues. Did I enter a beaten dagger correctly? Is this the data? But now you're part of the experiment, so if these are all answers, do all three. I think this is the right thinking diagram. Okay, anyway, let's see what this is. It will complain if something is inconsistent or deviate on them. But first of all, we have this. Yeah, it does look like it. Yeah. I think it's good. Okay. Yeah. So far, so good. And that's the answer. So erase this last one, that was comparison. But that's basically what it is. And again, those of you, Durst and various Ramanujan's notebooks, and probably recognize this expression, don't want those. Anyway, so we can continue playing like this, and my point is that it's a kinetic of this from the brain. So I hope I fulfill my promise to be in the genetic. But now let's go back and ask what is going on here. So I give you three tables of integrals, and they all enjoy the symmetries. So they all enjoy the words. And the way I think you to think about it, Monty is better than I do, that Grothendieck wanted to organize information about the quantum homology and various other homology in one overarching framework such that these other versions are different specifications. So what's going on here is that all these tables of integrals I'm presenting are shadows of specializations, something else, some other invariant of a graph or three manifold if you wish, and there are particular evaluations or specific. So now my goal to you is to explain where it comes from. Of course, I couldn't come up with coefficients of these integrals just trying to make sure that they satisfy the moves. They actually somewhere here at calculations. So my goal in the remaining 5 minutes to explain what this thing is. What is that? This Matidic theory, because different specialization. And that's actually a conceptual lesson. It's a lesson because it provides us the tools to build rather strong invariant manifolds. That's actually a word. So before we do anything unorthodox or unusual, let's recall that according to IT, Siegel, and the others, topological quantum field theories have the structure of categorical structure where you assign a number to manifold of all dimensions, vector space to four-dimensional one space, categories to spaces, and so on. We have two minus one categories. So you can say that a d-dimensional TQFT is a functor from ordisms that includes all kinds of order, d minus one, and so on. Point to D category whose objects associated to point are D minus one categories to one dimensional. So there is this extended T Q of T understanding of this algebraic structure. So this is all good, but imagine now that you have some D dimensional T Q of T, and imagine that D is high enough. Could be either 5, 6 or something like that, just defined by the structure. And then imagine that you want to fix a particular n-dimensional submanifold once and for all. So n is smaller than d. And then you can define almost by pathology, or is it will be 50 version of push forward operation, hybrid, d minus n dimensional t, which if asked to assign something, to a point, one dimensional, will be feeding it into TQ of T D dimensional functor tensored with MN. So that's a rather straightforward approach. So it's extremely clear, well defined by the one. This is another one of fiber integration problem. Now the point of this construction is that if you say that my n-dimensional manifold is fixed once and for all, what you get as a result is actually d minus one dimensional security label by n manifold from this. That's cool. And now you can start asking how this d minus n dimensional security one of those states could this, that, and so on and so forth. Our material structure in this part that explains the three tables of integrals has that there is some theory that's associated to each three manifold. And then for this three-dimensional theory, you can compute lots of other things. And these different computations are shadows that I sketched, but they're really shadows of. Where it comes from is the following. There are very few TQFTs that we know in high dimension rate. Very little we don't, other than those that compute really classical. But it's okay if your theory is allowing topological invariance only on part of this. So this idea that I just described can be actually generalized in a subtle way to non-topological. Allow logical invariance only on part of the term. And the part we care about is this MN, this manifold, the n-dimensional part. So if you think about general field theory that allows what we call topological twist and n-dimensional, you can still run this machinery. The only thing is that your output is not going to be a TQFT. It'll be a normal physical. But the cool thing is now you're providing to each n-dimensional manifold a quantum field theory or TQFT properties in dimension d minus. And these are very unusual TQFT value invariants of two manifolds. So what we care about in physics is structure that has an conformal, so we care about conformal field, which is a special, and some class of them that come from six dimensions allow actually such topological invariance on three manifolds. What I described for you is the following. I described for you how to take a three manifold, feed it into this machinery of six-dimensional theory, so six stands for bosonic and fermionic direction. So it's a six-dimensional field theory. It's not, it does not allow full topological symmetry in six dimensions, but it's totally okay if topological symmetry is only along three or four manifolds, and that's good enough for us. Because what it does, it takes as an input a three manifold, for example, by a graph like, okay, and spits out something in dimension d minus m, which also happens to be three. Because original starting point is six, we're talking about three manifolds, so it gives you a three-dimensional field theory, which is not topological, but pretty rich and interesting, labeled by topological three manifolds. So what happens here is that we're getting this QFT value invariance of. And what I did today is computed particular partition functions of this gadget on the left in different backgrounds. So to me, these are just different shadows, different in the sense of graph and material. Now, I cannot give a mathematical, it would be nice, really, to give a mathematical definition. But again, it's not topological. It doesn't have enough to be fully topological. So I can't. And three-dimensional, the only structure it has is conformal. It has. But again, it still does not allow me to define it. But if you go one step further, and this will be my last slide, which is, in some sense, a lesson for tomorrow lecture. If you feed into this whole machinery of four manifold, now actually something interesting happens. You understand that four manifolds are complicated. Life should get worse. But because we're subtracting the dimension of our six, the resulting theory is now two-dimensional. And two-dimensional conformal field theories surely have a mathematical name. So the structure that we're exploring then is essentially the structure of vertex separated algebra. And what you could say is that this whole fiber integration forward with respect to integration on a four manifold itself
a two-dimensional CFT or mathematically a vertex up. So therefore, whatever this is, it should produce a VOA value invariant performing. At this point, it sounds like a dream or fantasy, but tomorrow I'll show you something extremely concrete that will make it just.
So I think what we're going to try to do, I'm not sure if we will get feedback or not, but I know that there's at least a couple of people over there who are really interested in asking questions. What we're going to try to do is let them ask their question, and then if we start getting feedback, we'll have to mute them while you answer, but it's going to take a little bit of coordination, but hopefully it should be okay. So if there's someone over in Waterloo who wants to ask a question to Sergey.
Well, when I was curious when he had that limit of ZA SQ to rational well to rules of unity, it also depends on A.
Right, so the question, if I understand correctly, is dependence on this little index A, which is the offset of a theta function. So the correct statement, which is slightly oversimplified here on the board, is that you have to sum over A with some universal coefficient. So given the choice of Kleinian graph or free manifold, in this limit, there is a sum over A, dA, which I conveniently ignore, and coefficients for in front of each A or CA are some extremely simple universal factor. That's
other questions from our end?
Yeah. So, I mean, this Wittenrush-Deakin Tribe invariant of the three-manifold, you know, we know one way to write it as a sum which only converges at roots of unity. And, I mean, it sound my understanding of what you're saying is that this is another way of writing it as such a sum, like, you know, so that you can also, you know, can write it as a sum using the knot invariants. What's the relationship between these two pictures?
What to do with Chiprian? So, first of all, I want to clarify that there is a surgery formula for WRT invariant. Of a three manifold, which is a surgery on some knot or link, frame knot or link, which is basically a sum over colors of colored, say, Jones polynomials. So morally, WRT of a surgery is sum over colors of colored Jones invariant. If you work with SU2, which is what I've been doing all along. In fact, the reason we have just one integration variable for each vertex is because we're in rank one. But I want to point out that that sum makes no sense at values of k other than integers. Why? Because the sum runs from 0 up to color equals k. And there is no way, and that's precisely the difficulty in old days or even in modern days, to convert that in Q series. You cannot just say that I extend the sum to infinity. That's going to be a wrong number. You cannot just replace k in the upper limit of the summation by inverse of log q. That's a ridiculous thing. You don't write a q series as a sum of finitely many terms which run up to log q if q is a complex number. Again, it makes no sense. But first, I want to emphasize an extremely simple point, which is already visible in the case of, say, your Linda formula, that all of these constructions of WRT from old days involve k appearing explicitly in very inconvenient places. K appears as some overall power, and that would be log of Q if you want to express it as a Q series. But K also appears as upper limit of a sum, and that's a problem. That's where you cannot say that it's a special limit of a sum. It is just a value at a given K. That's all there is. Well, and that's exactly the point, to give alternative definition of some other object, which at radial limits will have precisely those values even by at k. So did it make it clear?
Yeah.
There are many more things I'd like to know, but it's a start.
Well, can we unmute? Why can't we hear? Sorry,
it takes time to switch.
Do you want to repeat your question, Ben?
I was just saying, you know, well, it will take many years probably before I'm satisfied on this point. You know, it's a start.
Other questions on this side? I had one more question. There's at least conjecturally suggestions that the Rashidic and Sarayan variants are well-defined, say, over Habiru ring, and sort of other conjectures about Galois action. Does this clarify those? Like, can you hear me? No?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yes.
I didn't hear the middle part of it.
There's various questions about the sort of if you take different roots of unity of the same order, so there's some Galois symmetry of the finite K which students arrive in variants. Does this help clarify that? I couldn't actually tell. Sorry.
Yeah, so I actually don't know much about it. I would love to hear more about, based on this, whatever it's called, water cooler conversation that we're planning in 15, 20 minutes. All I can say is that there is, I'm not sure if it's related to it, but if you think of this invariance as a function of tau, when Q lives in inside the unit disk, tau lives, say, in upper half plane. So you can ask how this invariance behave at roots of unity other than this exponential of 2 pi over q. And people start analyzing this, and again, that's where this various mock and other modularity properties seem to show up. So I suspect that those modularity properties are related to behavior and Galois action that you mentioned. But again, this is kind of structure that hasn't been explored much.
Davide has another question. And then...
Can you modify the partition function to include the decoration of the manifold by lines, by Wilson lines?
If I can add Wilson lines, or?
Yes.
We did simple examples in a paper with Dupay, Kumran, and Pavel. And it was just to try to see what's happening. For example, one expectation we had is that this would factorize into invariance into Q series for a three manifold times a Q series for naught, otherwise known as a Jones polynomial. And factorization does not happen, so kind of mashes it. And also, the goal of the paper was actually to study homological invariance. And in a simple case that Lev Rozanski looked at, he was considering knots and links and S1 process. It's a very boring setup where you have basically unknots, one process, two running along the S1. So the answer seemed to agree. But again, we just did a couple of examples and we haven't studied anything beyond. I'm sure that there is some structure, but we were anticipating, say, factorization. It didn't.
I see.
So, and then agreement with Rozanski, that did seem to happen. And that's all I can say.
Do you think scaling rules will hold?
Oh, no, we didn't. So that's a great question. So the question then is to try to take a more serious look at the Z hats in the presence of knots. And just like we did Kirby moves and try to do various scaling moves and Riley Meister moves. That should be even easier, and we haven't done that. That's a great. I would expect invariance and nice behavior, but so far this is just plain. That's a good question.
I think that's the questions from our end.
Okay. So I guess we can ask people here now.
Yeah.
I understand we have questions for Sergey.
Are there specific 6/16 CFTs that would give rise to, for example, signature or the bit?
So Witham genus, I'll show you tomorrow. And yeah, for us, the 6/16 is very unique in a sense that this is, in some sense, the largest quantum field theory we can have. We don't have any QFTs, nice ones, above dimension 6. And this is the largest amount of supersymmetry we can have. So such theories, in fact, are classified and labeled by choice of roots of AD, right, most. I mean, there are some extensions to other things, right? So people usually use AD.
So signature should be easier, is there?
But signature is just a number. So in some sense, this is overkill, because what I'm saying is that if you have a numerical invariant, like a function, okay, you can sometimes factor it through some QFT whose partition function of a different kind is signature or the genus of choice. Tomorrow I'll give you examples of specifically performing it. But signature by itself is just a number. So I can basically take my triune density. This is my thing. That's how
it is. It's like one of the coefficients of the.
Exactly. Yeah. So the way to think about it, okay, from the state point of view, it's one of, it's some coefficient or something inside this that gives you signature, another computation. Else, another computation gives you. All of them should be kind of packaged up.
Anyone else have a question?
So when you do this dimension reduction for the four-manifold, why do you use?
That's because of Witham's topological twist. So he had this idea of logically twisting, and that he stops. So
twisting.
Exactly. Okay. So I have to ensure that this theory, supersymmetry, even though it has 16, it's not enough to be twisted on anything. That would be really cool and ambitious. But it's not enough. So it's only enough to twist it, I think, up to 5 manifold, so that you can. But in our applications, if you want to twist it on a 3 manifolds, it goes from 16 to 4, and if I have a 4 manifold, it eats up even more. So basically, every time I add dimension. So that's why it drops all the way across.
Are there any other questions? Now we can thank Sergey again.